We continue our learning We are in the final Mishnah of Masechet Shkalim, Perek Ches, Mishnah Ches. The Mishnah is going to discuss what they did with the limbs of the daily Karban HaTamid, which was a Karban Ola. What this has to do with this Perek or this Masechta is a big question. The Mefarshim deal with this. We'll hopefully address that at the end of the Mishnah. But nonetheless, the Mishnah here is going to deal, probably makes more sense to be in Masechet Tamid, which addresses these issues. But here the Mishnah is going to discuss what they did with the limbs of the Karban HaTamid prior to burning them on the Mizbeach. It was really a two-step process, as we'll see in the Mishnah. Evarei HaTamid, the limbs of the Karban HaTamid, which in Masechet Tamid is described that they were cut up in a special way, into different pieces, to different parts. Nitanin mechatzi kevesh ulamata b'mizrach. They were placed on the lower half of the ramp of the Mizbeach, towards the east. Now the Mizbeach, as we know, had a ramp. The Torah says the end of Parshas Yisro, lo saleh b'malos al mizbechi. We're not supposed to have steps going up to the Mizbeach. We need a ramp. That ramp was towards the east of the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. This is the Mizbeach HaOlah. This is the Mizbeach that had the Karbonos placed on them, not to be with the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, not to be confused with Mizbeach HaZav, the Mizbeach HaPnimis, the inner Mizbeach and the Heichal, which stood between the menorah and the Shulchan, upon which they placed the Torahs. This was for the Karbonos, Mizbeach HaNechoshes, and it had a ramp. And the ramp was 32 amos in length, 16 amos in width, and when the Kohanim came to bring up the limbs of the Karban HaTamid daily on the Mizbeach, they would bring them up really in a two-step process. First, they'd place them on the ramp itself, on the lower half of the ramp, the 16 lower amos of the ramp. Then they would go into the Lishkas HaGazis, the chamber of hewn stone where the Sanhedrin sat, and they would read Shema, the daily Shema. And then they'd come back right outside. It was the Mizbeach. You could even see the Mizbeach from the Lishkas HaGazis, where the Sanhedrin sat. They'd come out from saying Shema and then bring the limbs from the ramp where they sat up to the Mizbeach to be burnt. The Mishnah is coming to teach us that the Evarim, the limbs of the Karban HaTamid, this daily Tamid, were on the lower half towards the east, meaning the 8 amos. It was 16 amos wide. So the 8 amos towards the east, that's where they were placed on the lower half of the ramp, the 16 lower amos out of the 32. Vishel Musafin, and the limbs of the Karban Ola of a Musaf, let's say Shabbos, for example. So those were placed Nitanim Mechatzi Kevesh Ulamata Bamarav. Those limbs were placed on the lower half, the lower 16 amos, but they were to the west. They were to the 8 amos of the width, they were to the west, to the opposite side of the Mizbeach, of where the Karban HaTamid was. And there's another girsa that was just the reverse, that the Tamid was in the west, and the Evarim of the Musafin were in the east. But our girsa has it the first way. And then, Vishol Roshei Chodashim, now Rosh Chodesh, they're also a Karban Musaf, and they were limbs as well, but they weren't the same, they were not placed in the same place as the other Musafin, like Shabbos and Yom Tov. Rosh Chodesh, in order to announce, people didn't necessarily know when Rosh Chodesh was, so that people would recognize the day was Rosh Chodesh, they put them in a more prominent place, and that was Nitanim al Karkov HaMizbeach Milmala. They were placed not on the ramp, but rather between the horns, literally, of the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach had 4 chronos around, and on the area where the Kohanim would walk, the Kohanim would go up the ramp, and they would walk between the chronos of the Mizbeach, those horns, the place for them to walk. That's where they would place the limbs of the rush of Rosh Chodesh before they would burn them. There is another opinion that the Karkov is not a reference to the top of Mizbeach, it's a reference to the Sovev, which was an area where the Kohanim would walk around, which is not on the top, but on the side. Maybe that also was a prominent place. Either way, the limbs of the Musaf and of Rosh Chodesh were placed in a different area than the other Evarim, than the other Musaf and for Shabbos and Yontif, and the daily Karban HaTamid, which were placed on the Kevesh on the ramp. Then the Mishnah says, Hashkol v'habikurim ein nohagin ela bifnei habayis. The halacha of giving machzis hashekel. or the which were brought for Karbonos Tzibur, or the halacha of Bikurim. So these only applied Bifnei Habayis when we had a Beis HaMikdash. There was no mitzvah to bring today. We bring a Machzah Shekel on Erev Purim as a zecher, to remember the Machzah Shekel. But the halacha doesn't really apply today because we don't have Karbonos Tzibur. So what's there? We're not collecting Shkolim, Machzah Shekel for Karbonos Tzibur. Bikurim, of course, does not apply either nowadays unless in the Beis HaMikdash, because it says, Reishis Bikurei Ad Masachot Tavi Beis Hashem Elokecha. Beis Hashem Elokecha means when there is a Beis HaMikdash, then you have Bikurim, but there's no Beis Hashem. The Bikurim were brought in a basket to the Beis HaMikdash itself, given to the Kohen. And others learn it from the fact that it says, Vihini Chol Lefnei Mizbach Hashem Elokecha. We place the basket of Bikurim and the first fruits of the Shivas Haminim on the Mizbeach. In front of the Mizbeach, you need a Mizbeach. If we have a Mizbeach, there's a din of Bikurim. There's no Mizbeach. There's no din of Bikurim. So therefore, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, there were Shkolim and Bikurim, and when there's no Beis HaMikdash, we not. The only difference was that when there was a Beis HaMikdash, there was still a difference between Shkolim and Bikurim. Shkolim were given even from Chutz La'aretz. Bikurim, however, only brought from Eretz Yisrael. Aval, says the Mishnah, Maser Dagon. Umaser behema v'habachoros, but giving trumas and maser from grain, and maser behema, where the Torah says that we're supposed to give 1/10 v'chol masar b'karvatzon, kol asher yavor tachas hashoveh, they go under the staff, and we paint, put a red mark on the 10th one, ha'asiri ha'kodesh l'Hashem, described in Parshas Bechukosai. So the maser behema and maser dagon, giving trumos and masos, v'habachoros, and the kedusha that we have of the firstborn animal, as the Torah describes in several places, noagin bein bifnei habayis bein shelo bifnei habayis. These halachos apply, maser dagon, maser behema, and b'choros. Those halachos apply even when there's no Beis HaMikdash. Now, let's go through them. Maser dagon, so the Bar Tuner explains, because this is according to the opinion that the kedusha sa'aretz lo batla, that the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, the soil of Eretz Yisrael, the kedusha that it was endowed with when Yehoshua came, was not nullified. That's a machlokes, but the Mishnah here assumes that's why maser dagon would be would still apply today, apparently, midoraisa. Okay, if you hold kedusha saretz is batla, then of course the trumos and masos nowadays, which is the generally accepted halacha, are only midrabanan. The Sifrin Pashas Korach, they derive it from the following. It says kol trumos hakadoshim asher yarimu bnei Yisrael Hashem anasati l'chol vanechol v'nosecha itcha l'chok olam. What is chok olam in the context of trumos? It says chok olam. Chok olam means it's a law forever for future generations. So some learn it from the fact that kedusha sa'aretz lo betela. Some learn from the fact that it says chok olam, that it should be ledoros forever. And others claim that today the din of maser dagon is only midrabanan. What about maser behema? So there's a hekesh between maser behema and maser dagon. They are both a maser. They're both a 1/10, 10%. So we make a comparison. If maser dagon is still alive and well midoraisa nowadays, based on the two proof texts we quoted, so maser behema is the same. What about bechoros? So the bechor, the kedusha of a bechor, a firstborn animal, is meirechem, is from the womb. That's not a chova of Eretz Yisrael. It's not a chovas karka. It's a chovas haguf. So it's a chova on the body. And therefore, there is a halacha of bechor and maser as well, bizman hazeh. The only difference is that, well, I can't bring them as a carbon. What do I do with the bechor? So there is one of the strategies that we have is to join. If you have an animal, a female animal, and it's pregnant, so you join with a non-Jew in partnership, and therefore, since it's partly owned by a non-Jew, it's not chayv, because it does not become a bechor. If it would be a bechor, or a maser hema, for that matter, so then we have a problem. So what would we do? You can't bring karbanos today. We don't have a beis hamikdash. So we wait until they have a mum, and once they have a mum, then you can eat them wherever you are. The Gemara in Bechoros and Daf Nun Gimel says that the Chachamim abolished Maser Behema completely. Why? Because they were afraid of takala, the obstacle that people would stumble. Maybe people would violate the issue, the prohibition of giza, of shearing and avoda and working the animal, which is prohibited for maaser behema as well as bechor. So at least by maaser behema, they abolish because they're afraid that until it gets a mum, the owner may shear it or may work it. It could take a long time till it gets a mum, till it's going to be edible. And that's one possibility. Or maybe you'll shecht it and eat it before as a mum. Bechor, however, they weren't able to abolish because that its kedusha is not based on us. Maaser behemah's kedusha is based on us. We're the one who count to the tenth, so that they have the right to abolish. But bechor we couldn't abolish, and therefore we try to get out of it by partnering with the non-Jew. Then the Mishnah says, Hamaktish shkolim ubikurim hare ze kodesh. What about nowadays? A person who's makdish money as shkolim or peros for the first for the shivas aminim, the first fruit says bikurim. There's no beis hamikdash. So do they have any kedusha? So the says the Tanakhama, yes, there is kedusha. What do you need to do with them? Well, the bikurim you have to wait till they spoil, and then and the shkolim and you're supposed to put them in geniza, or some say you throw them into Yam HaMelech. Because they have kedusha, and once the bikurim are spoiled, so then you can get rid of them. And the shkolim, as we said, you would have to throw them to Yam HaMelech or put them or hide them away in geniza. Rabbi Shimon Omer, ha'omer bikurim kodesh einam kodesh. So he disagrees. He says if you say bikurim are going to be kodesh nowadays, they're not kodesh. Why? Because it says in the pasuk tavi beis Hashem Elokecha. So what does that say? Very clearly, there's something they have to bring to the beis hamikdash. Therefore, even b'di'evet, even if you're makdash your peiros for bikurim bizman hazeh, there's no shame bikurim that schala takes effect on them, and they're not holy at all. There is an opinion in the Yerushalmi that Rabbi Shimon not only argues when it comes to Bikurim, but he even argues on the din of Shkolim, and it holds that they're not Kodesh as well. That is another opinion that exists as well. So let's just discuss the issue of this Mishnah before we move on to Maseches Yoma. Why are we speaking about a Varei Tamid at all? Why are we Mishnah speaking about the limbs of a Korban HaTamid, where they go on the Mizbeach? This side, that's on the lower half, the east or the west. So the Tiferes Yisrael makes a point. He says, "Lo zachise leida ech shayach din zeh lekan." I don't really know what this is doing here. And then he concludes by saying, "V'hakadosh baruch hu yoir einenu b'sisrei Torah." So Hashem should illuminate our eyes with the secrets of His Torah. I really can't explain it. And there are those who claim that the reason it's here is it relates back to the fourth mission in this parak, where we spoke about, if you remember, spreading out the paroches on the itztava, on the gaga itztava, the platform, the portico for everyone to see how beautiful the malacha was in order to make the paroches. So this is here as well. The same way we spoke about the limbs of the musaf of Rosh Chodesh, we place on the karkov hamizbeach, like on the top area, not just on the ramp, in order to publicize that it's Rosh Chodesh. So here we also, we're publicizing, just like the paroches, we want to publicize something here as well. And others say that maybe the reason is that we spoke about the limits when it comes to Basar Kodesh that became Tameh. So where they can be burnt, the borders, inside, outside. So here also we're speaking about Gvulin, we're speaking about borders regarding not the Beis HaMikdash proper, the Azara, but where we place the Avaram on the Kevesh before we bring them up to the Mizbeach. We begin Maseches Yoma, Perek Aleph. Mishnah Aleph Yoma is the Masechta that deals with the Avodah of Yom Kippur. The first seven program about the Avodah of Yom Kippur, only the eighth Perek is applicable, is relevant, Bizman Hazeh, which speaks about fasting, what to do with children on a fast day, the Inuyim, the Chamesh Inuyim of Yom Kippur, that's all in the eighth Perek. But the first seven prakim are about the avodah of the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur, which was very, very comprehensive, very complex, many details which we're going to discuss. Why do we call this Maseches Yoma? So the word Yoma just means day or the day, the Yom HaMiyuchad, the special day, the designated day. The Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah Daf Chaf Aleph says it's called the day Yom HaRabbah, the Yom HaGadol, and others claim that other Makoros have, other sources say that the name of this Masechta is Yom HaMasechta. Maseches Yom HaKippurim. Same way Beitza is also called Maseches Yom Tov, Yom is also called Maseches Yom HaKippurim. Now, this it's discussed at great length in Parshas Acharemos. The entire Avodah is there, the beginning of Parshas Acharemos. And our Mishnah is going to teach us about the fact that the Kohen Gadol had to go into Par, was sequestered for the first 7 days before Yom Kippur, and we'll have to see, based on the Gemara, what the reason for that is. Says the Mishnah like this, Shivas Yomim Kodem Yom HaKippurim Mafrishin Kohen Gadol Mibeso Lelishkas Palhedrin. So the 7 days before Yom Kippur, they would separate the Kohen Gadol from his house, and from his house may not only mean his physical house, as we'll see later in the Mishnah, Beiso may also mean his wife. He should not be with his wife for 7 days. And that's in fact the way the Gemara understands it. We don't want him to come Tamei. Maybe she's a Suffolk Nida. We're not sure. And then he won't be able to come to the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur because he becomes Tamei. If she's a Nida, he becomes Tamei for 7 days as well. And the Kohen Gadol is the only one who can do the Avodah on Yom Kippur. In fact, he does everything. He even brings the Karmana Tamei, which is a regular daily Karban. And we'll discuss throughout this, the beginning of the Masechta, we'll discuss the different clothing that the Kohen would wear. There, he would wear the Big Day Lavan, the white clothing, which were you for the unique Yom Kippur Avodos, and the Big Day Zav, the extra four garments, which the Kohen would add on, which we wore daily, the Kohen Gadol would wear for the regular, let's say, the Karban HaTamid, and some of the daily activities, Avodos, that we would have. He would also have to do the Yom Kippur as well. He would wear those special type the clothing which he wore daily. Now, the Gemara says that we learn the fact that he has to be sequestered for 7 days from the following pasuk. It says in Pesach Ol Moed Lo Seitzu Shivas Yomim. This is in Vayikra Peraches. This is earlier. Kash, and this is not in the context of Yom Kippur at all. But it says, don't leave the Olam Moed for 7 days. This is speaking about the Miluim, the preparatory days before Yom HaShmini, before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Kasher Asa Bayom Hazeh, the pasuk says, Tziva Hashem La'asos L'chaper Aleichem. So La'asos and L'chaper are two different words. La'asos, to do. L'chaper, to atone. And the Gemara learns like this. La'asos, that's Maaseh Para. That's referred to the Paraduma. And there is also a 7 day period as well. And L'chaper Aleichem, that's referring to Maaseh Yom Kippur. So the Kohen who had to burn the Paraduma and the Kohen who's going to do the Avodah of Yom Kippur both require this 7 day period of Hafrasha, just like Aaron and his sons had that Hafrasha during the 7 days of Miluim. So that's what it means. Shivas Yalim Kodem Yom HaKippurim Ma Frishin Kohen Gadol Mibeso Lelishkas Palhedrin. It was in the Azara, this particular chamber. Some say it was Parhedrin, and the Gemara says that Parhedrin is a Greek word which means Pekidei HaMelech, officers. And the Bryce in the Gemara on Daf Ches in Maseches Yuma says that it used to be called Lishkas Balvati, which is a Greek word which means officers or dignified officers. But once the Kohuna Gadola, we know, descended in its dignity. It really, we know during this Zman Bayisheni, so the Kohanim Gadolim were not the holiest of people. So, and often they even purchased the Kohuna Gadola financially. So and we had a new Kohen Gadol sometimes every year, because there are many Rishayim and they didn't survive the year. So they are and they use this name because Parhedrin is just like Pekidei HaMelech, where we switch them every year as well. So they call it Lishkas Parhedrin or Palhedrin for that reason, because it reminds them after it was called Lishkas Balvati, which was referring to officers. Then it got a name Parhedrin, which refers to the types of people who are appointed, who we switch every single year. And that was a reminder of what happened to the Kohanim Gadolim Bizman Bayisheni. Okay. Mishnah then says, "Umaskinu lo kohen acher tachtov." We would designate another kohen, a sgan, to be in this place. Shema yerabo psul. Maybe he will come pasul. He won't be able to do that. But delay to become tamei, and we need someone in his place. Now that Kohen, that other Kohen, did not have to separate from his house for 7 days because the hafrosh is not ma'akev, is not essential for the avodah. But the evidence, if you weren't sequestered for 7 days, you can still do the avodah. So the Kohen Gadol, yes, but the Sgan, no. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af isha acheres maskinin lo. Not only do we have, like the Tana Kama says, a Kohen Gadol in his place potentially, but we would also separate or designate another wife for him before Yom Kippur. Why? Shema Tomas Ishtokos. Maybe, God forbid, his wife would die, and a Kohen Gadol who doesn't have a wife cannot do the Avodah Yom Kippur. Shnei Amaris, the Mishnah says, V'chiper, quoting from Parshas Achremos, V'chiper Bado Uva'ad Beso. Beso Zoishto. Beso refers to his wife. So if that's the case, then like Rabbi Huda says, we have to be concerned and separate another wife. And Amrullah, the Chachamim said in response, we're not worried about that. And Cain, could be concerned that his wife may pass away, and Ledov herself, then maybe the second, there's no end to this, maybe the second wife will die. And therefore, we don't have to assume someone's going to die. It's not very common someone's going to die just suddenly. And we don't have to worry about that. The psul of the Kohen Gadol, that we are afraid of. Sure, he could become Tameh. So another Kohen we need, we don't say Ein Ladav or Sof when it comes to that. But this is obviously more common, something that's more prevalent, something that we do have to be concerned with, and therefore we do have another Kohen in his place. Now, regarding this issue of his wife, it's not as simple as it seems, because the Kohen Gadol also can have two wives. So, because the Pasuk says, uva'ad beiso, ba'ad beiso means one wife, one bias, and not shnei batim. So how does he do this? He's now married to two women. So, and he marries a woman before Yom Kippur, a second wife. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he has two wives, we have a problem. So what do we do? So the Gemara says, yes, he marries her before Yom Kippur. But we have to somehow, to resolve this issue, he has to give both of his wives a conditional divorce. And how does that happen? So the Gemara explains like this. He marries the second woman so that he has another beso, but he gives her a get. He is megarish her from now, at this moment before Yom Kippur, on condition, b'tanai, that his other wife, his first wife, doesn't die. So, on the condition, he marries this woman and says, okay, we're married, he's megarish her before Yom Kippur, the second woman. And then he says to the second woman, here is a get, I'm giving you a get, on condition that my first wife doesn't die, this is your get, we are divorced from now, before Yom Kippur, and therefore he's only married to his first wife. Ah, but he also, on Erev Yom Kippur, gives a get to his first wife as a tanai. And what's the tanai? What does he say? He says like this, this is going to be your get on the condition that I do something. What on a condition I do what? Well, I walk into the Beis HaKnesses on Har HaBayis as an example, and then it will become your get. Now, what would happen? So it means if, let's say, the first wife doesn't die before Yom Kippur, so the get of the second wife that he gave is chal, takes effect retroactively, mafreya, as we explained. And therefore, all he had on Yom Kippur was one wife, was his first wife. But what if the first wife dies? So what he should do is, before she dies, he sees she's getting very, very sick, what he should do is, he should be mekayim his tanai. He should go walk into the Beis Knesses, that was part of the condition, as she's very close to death. And that way, his first wife will be mugureshes l'mafrei retroactively from before Yom Kippur. And therefore, when Yom Kippur enters, he will have only had one wife, which is the second wife. That's the way the Mishnah describes the conditional divorce. And this way, we solve our problem. Now, there is a interesting question that Tosfos Yom Tov asks, which is, why are we nervous anyway about maybe his wife is going to die, maybe he'll come Tameh? Doesn't the Mishnah say in Avos in the fifth parak that there were 10 miracles that happened in the Beis HaMikdash, and one of them was that no Kohen Gadol was ever puzzled on Yom Kippur through Tumah? So one of the answers is simply that Ein Somchan al Anes. We don't rely on miracles. And others claim that that was true before, while Shimon HaTzadik and prior to him, where he was alive, and the earlier Kohanim. So they were very worthy, were people of great virtue. But after his passing, when they were not worthy anymore, so maybe now we have to be concerned even about Tumah.